Welcome back to the Florida History Podcast. I'm Kartik Krishnire.
And I'm Robert Bucciolato.
Robert, take us back through Walt Disney's original vision for the experimental prototype community of tomorrow, Epcot, because it's important for the listeners to comprehend his vision versus what became reality.
All right, so Walt decides, as we mentioned in the first episode, I believe it was, he decides that he's going to build a theme park in Florida. Buys up a lot of land, as we mentioned last time, almost 30,000 acres, a ridiculous amount of land. And he decides, well, you know, I'm going to do a Walt Disney World. Obviously, it's going to be called World and not Land because it's going to be bigger. But I have all this extra land. What do I want to do with it? And Walt became very introspective the last decade of his life. And he started thinking a lot more about nostalgia in America. And he didn't really like the trends that were taking place in the late 50s and 1960s. He didn't like the fear. He didn't like ideologies like, you know, communism or Marxism and things of that nature. He was a really big proponent in the idea of small town America, in the spirit of community. And he was also simultaneously a big proponent in futuristic elements. He was obsessed with space travel, underwater exploration, submarines, all of the little bric-a-brac mechanics that were coming out in the future. Futurism itself was very popular in the 1950s. And so he decided that he wanted to build a prototype city of the future. And basically what it was it would take place outside of Disney World. It would, Disney World would be there for, you know, entertainment and attractions, things of that nature. But it would be a community where people could purchase and plot a land or have a home. And there would also be a cityscape, which was futuristic. And it was designed, there was a huge, huge model. And I mean, you could probably call it like a bigature. It was giant, the size of an entire room, and it outlined all the floor plan. You know, there were churches, there were grocery stores, hospitals, all of these things. His idea was to essentially, in his own little sphere of Florida, build his own community for people that wanted to come together and they wanted to cohabitate in a futuristic experiment of urbanization, an idea where you could take the best elements of the country, the best elements of the suburbs, and the best elements of the city, merge them together, and essentially leave out a lot of the other elements that come with those areas, like, you know, isolation, crime, poverty, you know, wage insecurity, all of these different things, because it would be supervised by Disney, essentially. That was the idea. Now, if you're listening to what I'm saying, and you just take a moment to sort of let what I'm saying sink into you, you kind of notice that sounds a little trippy. And the reason why I say that is a lot of people kind of make it seem as though he's trying to create his own version of living, a uniform version of living in which people have to sort of coexist with rules. And so this was one of the things that kind of made all the other people in Disney sort of wince when they heard. They liked the future elements. They definitely liked the Disney World. They liked the idea of Disney promoting a new wave of technology and urban living and all of these wonderful things that could be used in commerce. But they didn't like the idea of Disney being the people to tell people how to live. And so, despite all of Walt's salesmanship and all of his promotion and all of his trying, it was kind of dead on arrival, because his vision of communal living took out a key proponent in American living, and that was choice. And if you want to know about choice in Disney, all you have to do is go to a restaurant in Disney and ask for a Pepsi. So
in spite of what we said about Joan Crawford on a previous episode and her relationship with Walt being on the Pepsi board, yes, Disney is a Coke property.
So, you know, I mean, Disney is a, you know, it's wonderful. I mean, it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's amazing. That being said, I wouldn't want Disney to be in charge of the home ownership. You know, I mean, and that's essentially what was taking place. And so, you know, and after Walt was gone, Roy kind of was like, you know, God, we're not in the governing of people. This is insanity. You know, we have all of this land and all of this resources. Technically, we could open our own city if we wanted to, but why would we want to do that? You know, I mean, and this was one of the things that sort of, you know, I think Walt kind of sensed that he was on borrowed time. And so he was really kind of cooking on all cylinders creatively the last few years of his life. I mean, an extraordinary array of different endeavors. And so he didn't really stop to think, okay, well, Prototype City of Tomorrow, is Disney going to build a police force? Is Disney going to, you know, is Disney going to hire the doctors to operate the hospital? Is that going to be run by a different hospital? You know, and so he didn't really take the time to think about these things. You know, who's going to maintain the work, the roads? Is it going to be the utility companies or the cities all around the prototype? Is it going to be us? And so because he didn't think about those things, because he didn't really care, when he was gone, Roy and everybody else was like, well, let's keep the name Epcot and let's do something else kind of futury. And the city sort of fell by the wayside because, as I mentioned in the first episode, and as I'm saying right now, it, at the end of the day, was not really going to be compatible with what Disney primarily always has been. And that is a creative institution, whether it is something that is, you know, a 3D like cartoon or, you know, a film, or if it's something that is brick and mortar like a theme park, it's not the same thing. And ultimately, that made it dead on arrival when Roy became the sole runner and operator of Disney.
Yeah. And so you have a change in Disney leadership as well when Roy passes away and Card Walker, who is part of the Disney family, is of course, what is he? He's a nephew, right? He becomes the president of Disney, but he has his own vision for this thing. He now sees it, Epcot, as a way to create another amusement park on Disneyland, a second amusement park.
A second gate, essentially.
Yes.
And there's a lot of different ideas that are floating around during this time period. Because, you know, this is the 1970s. It's not, you know, 2023 where, you know, a second gate is now, you know, and as soon as you open a first gate, you start planning for the second gate. Nobody had ever done that before. So for a long time, there were talks about just continuing, you know, to expand Disney World. And so what they decided that they were going to do was they were going to make a futuristic world. It was going to be a little bit out of the way of Disney World. It was going to be its own thing. And they were going to build the monorail to meet it so that people could travel from Disney World, the Magic Kingdom, to Epcot. And so they decide to take the sort of spirit that Walt had established at the World Showcase. And they decided, well, you know, this seems to be what he was looking at for the next steps of the company. And this was something that really until Michael Eisner came in the 1980s, the rest of the 70s and the early 80s, this was sort of what Disney World kind of became, which was they started kind of read the notes and all the different dioramas and models that Walt had left, and they were kind of trying to build on what he did. They weren't really having their own ideas per se. They were kind of just trying to figure out, okay, well, I think this is what he wanted to do, so let's do this. And so they decided, well, the World Showcase is kind of what he wanted to do. He was getting ready to jump into future living and future technologies and Imagineering and all these great things. Why don't we just have a theme park that is essentially a year-long, ever-changing World's Fair?
Yeah. So Disney, led by Card Walker, begin pitching the idea of World Showcase and World Showcase pavilions to different nations. And initially, there were 30 that signed up. Then, as the 1970s progressed, we were down to 20. Then, as the 1970s were turning into the 1980s, 1979, that time period, we were down to 15. And eventually, we had, I believe, just 12 that opened in 1982. Well, actually, 10 that opened in 1982, then Morocco and Norway opened later to make it 12. So a really kind of negative progression, negative trend line for Disney throughout the 1970s in terms of World Showcase. Let me give the listeners a little taste of what didn't happen. Costa Rica, Taiwan, Australia, and New Zealand. Switzerland was going to have a Matterhorn ride. The Holland Pavilion was apparently going to be artist renderings of it from the mid 70s are very impressive. Germany did open. There is a German pavilion now, but the Rhine River Cruise, which was going to be the big attraction of the Germany Pavilion, was never built. Brazil was scrapped in 1978. Now, by the way, the rumor now in 2024 is that if there is a new World Showcase Pavilion anytime in the future, it will be Brazil. But it's 50 years ago or 40 something years ago, they scrapped it. Japan, which does have a pavilion, as I'm sure our listeners know, but they had they were going to have a bullet train motion simulator, which we saw great artist renderings and demos of, right, that were built out. They were going to have an Omni Mover ride, potentially, like a lot of other Disney rides. There was talk of a Mount Fuji attraction. And there was also a show called Meet the World that ended up opening at Disneyland Tokyo instead. Now, in fairness on the Japan thing, I think the bullet train thing particularly would have been cool and probably should have been in Orlando. A lot of this stuff ended up at Tokyo Disneyland. Poland was never opened. Italy, the gondola dark ride net was never opened. The Roman ruins walkthrough never got built. The UK, the Great Britain Pavilion. They were going to have a Christmas Carol show. That never happened. There was going to be a Thames River cruise. That never happened. We saw on Disney maps in the 1990s, the area next to the Great Britain Pavilion was going to be laid out for an extension of the pavilion as the Enchanted Forest. That never happened. The latest rumor, Robert, which I'm sure you've heard, is that there's going to be a Mary Poppins show. At the Great Britain Pavilion, that would more fit the theme of what Disney's been doing lately. Equatorial Africa, there was a lot of hubbub about that pavilion. In fact, even had I've seen film clips of Michael Landon on opening day of Epcot in October of 1982, talking to people about the Equatorial Africa pavilion that's to come. And it was going to have a forest walkthrough. It was going to have multiple films. There was going to be a museum. There was going to be a small zoo. None of that happened. I guess some of it you could say is now at Animal Kingdom. Saudi Arabia Pavilion never happened. UAE Pavilion, United Arab Emirates, was going to have a magic carpet ride. That never happened. The Denmark Pavilion, this is really interesting, Robert. That kind of got built. And the bathrooms now... in the if you go clockwise through World Showcase, One of the bathrooms, the big bathroom complex, is a legacy of the Danish pavilion that was aborted. And in fact, you can tell if you go to Epcot anytime soon, you'll see, oh yeah, this looks very Scandinavian.
You hear that, Norway? You're not fooling anybody. We know your bathrooms are Denmark.
Exactly. And I should say that there was supposed to be a unified Scandinavian theme, and Sweden was going to have a pavilion also. That didn't happen. Norway, of course, came through next to Denmark. Israel never happened. That was on all of I wish I still had saved this stuff from when I was a kid. All of the Epcot information guides we were given when we went to the park at Israel, Equatorial Africa, and Morocco, still in the mid-1980s, is coming. Morocco did open. Mexico. So here's an interesting thing. Let me just mention a couple others before we get to Mexico, because then I want your comment on this. Venezuela, which was going to have an Orinoco River cruise. The Philippines, which was going to have a 15-minute film. And the Soviet Union Russia Pavilion, which was supposed to be built in the late 80s, early 90s, saw lots of artist renderings for it. When the Soviet Union collapsed, Russian Federation took over the project. That never happened. Now let's talk about Mexico for a minute, because this will just kind of tell us the problems with Epcot Center. Mexico did open on opening day, October 1st, 1982. It did. It opened with a ride. Now, the reality is, Robert, the ride was supposed to be in phase two, the phase two of Epcot Center that never quite happened. And because all of these things, some of them were later, but many of the things I just listed off never happened, were not going to be around for opening day, October 1st, 1982. In late 1981, Disney made the decision and told the Mexican government, you need to speed up construction of this boat ride. You're right. So the ride ended up being about a third of the size of what it was supposed to be. The waterfront area, which is going to be a big attraction of the Mexican pavilion, had to be cut down. And there was a number of other things that had to be moved or downsized so they could build this ride quickly and open it on opening day, because there were no other rides or significant attractions opening day in the World Showcase, which just kind of tells you the entire problem with Epcot Center, even though this thing was 10 years in planning when it opened on October 1st, 1982.
So if you guys have noticed, I talked a lot about a permanent World Showcase. And then we started talking about I talked about a permanent World's Fair, and then we started talking about a World Showcase. That was a little bit by design, because Epcot is essentially two parks in one. It's double the size of the Magic Kingdom. And as you just stated, Disney told the government of Mexico to finish the ride. That was one of the problems, because Disney was focused on the front of the park, which was dealing with technological achievements, our oceans, the human body, the land, farming, agricultural exhibits, things of that nature, the stuff that we originally are supposed to think about when we think about Epcot. The rest of the park, the funding and the building, was sort of outsourced to the host countries. And so that's where a lot of the problem lied. If it was a situation like Norway, where they were, whatever reason, Norway was like 1,000% invested in having a ride at Epcot. I mean, it was like, you know, New Zealand and Lord of the Rings. I mean, they were just obsessed with the idea. So, I mean, they were on time. They were ready to go. You know, I mean, that's one of the reasons why it's such a great attraction, is because, I mean, they were cooking on all cylinders. But that's not how every single country worked and operated. So it was a situation where, more than any other park, you had a lot of openings sort of gradually over the 1980s.
And let me point out, I should have done this earlier, Robert, so this is my was delinquent. Disney initially was going to build these things, and then eventually the budgets became so tight, they then turned it over to those national governments. So as you said, Mexico had to finish up the ride. Norway was gung-ho, so they went ahead. But a lot of these countries I listed that dropped out because they were going to help fund it, but they didn't think they were going to be on the hook for all the funding. But Epcot ran way, way over budget, to say the least. I think two or three times the over budget it was.
Now, once again, where does this fit in with Florida, and why are we at the Florida Squeeze so obsessed with Epcot? Well, Magic Kingdom is very much a Florida project of the 1960s. Epcot is very much a Florida project of the late 1970s and the 1980s, aka this is the golden age of Florida politics theme park. This is time stamped 1980s Florida, the pinnacle of Florida living. This theme park is a time capsule of what Florida was like when these two gentlemen speaking to you fell in love with this state.
The golden age.
The golden age, hands down. And every single politician had some desire to be affiliated with this theme park. Every single time a new ride opened, you better believe Bob Graham and Wayne Mixon were there giving a speech and a plaque. It was a huge thing for Florida in the 1970s. And if you go to one of the pavilions today in Epcot, you'll see a picture of every single Florida governor from Hayden Burns all the way down to Bob Graham with shovels, and they are doing the groundbreaking for Epcot. It was a huge, huge source of pride for Florida. And Epcot, in a way, was not only a desire to invest for Florida, for Disney to invest in the future. It was very much a desire of Florida to showcase that it had become a national model for how a state should operate. You got to remember that in the 1970s, talking 74, 75, Florida was one of the top four states that was totally dependent on the national economy. If there was going to be a recession, if there was going to be a depression, it was going to impact Florida and three other states the most hardest. By 1982-83, when Florida was celebrating this high watermark and when Epcot was opening up, Florida was winning awards because it became one of only a handful of states that were totally independent of the national economy. They were considered depression-proof states. So this was a huge, huge milestone for us. And Epcot was very much a victory lap for us because it wasn't just entertainment. It wasn't just a theme park. It was a showcase of the next 50 years of technological improvement and development. It was, by design, supposed to be America's showcase of every type of technology and every type of telecommunication until the 21st century. And Florida was, it was going to be a huge part. So Epcot, I think more than any other theme park, if you were to go to a legislator's house, you know, who was a part of that era, they'll have Epcot stuff because that was a big thing of pride for them.
Absolutely. And it is important as we leave off in this episode, because we're going to pick up on the next episode talking about Disney in the 80s in Florida, to understand this was the pride of Florida. And Epcot was a forward-looking park. right? And a demonstration of Florida's importance commercially to the world, a window to the world. Whereas the Magic Kingdom very much was kind of your fun in the sun type thing, which is what Florida did prior to we don't want to politicize this too much, but prior to the election of 1970, the election of Reuben Askew as governor of Florida changed the state completely and changed the outlook in the state. So we're going to pick up next week, Robert, with the 1980s, the Graham Nixon administration and their efforts to grow Disney, help grow Disney even further, and their efforts to attract more films and more filming of television programs and movies to Orlando and to Florida in general. We'll be back next week.